and welcome to Backflips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. I'm flying solo this evening as your host, Russell, but I am joined by two fine gentlemen, which I think quite a few of the British baseball community will be familiar with. I'm joined by Jason Durr and Graham Nielsen. I'll go to you first, Jason. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Russell. Glad to be on. Big fan of the show.
Yeah, well, glad to have you. And Graham, how are you doing?
I'm very well this evening, Russell. Thanks very much. And yeah, likewise. It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
No worries. You two fine gentlemen are the hosts of a new podcast around baseball cards. And that's kind of like why we have you on here today, to talk about baseball cards. For me, like, baseball cards has always been one of these things that I've known is like to the side of the sport. It's something that I personally didn't really kind of purchase anything while I was like really getting into the sport. I definitely got given loads of like free cards at like one of their MLB community events a couple of years ago, and it's like, here, have all these top cards. And it's like, oh, these are kind of actually cool. And actually the first time I bought baseball cards was last year. I think the day I got my money back from the MLB series, I was like, you know what, I want to actually I have some money to spend and I want to do something baseball related. Well, we'll get to my story a bit further in a bit. Jason, do you want to go kind of like through how you got into baseball cards? And do you remember what your first baseball card was?
I couldn't tell you when the first card I bought. I probably started buying cards in about 1983. You would go to the local corner store, 7-Eleven, and buy a pack of cards here and there. And probably there was slushy cups, and they used to have these coins in the bottom of those with baseball players in that. And that's probably the first thing I bought and started just buying Slurpees there. I know for a fact 1986 Topps was the first set I had bought. My parents bought that for probably my birthday. And then after that, I was, you know, probably hooked about 87 because I was 12. I had a job scorekeeping basketball games. So my money from there, I got half of it went to the bank, half of it went into baseball cards. And yeah, it was just off from ever since. Probably stopped around 91, 92 when I was in high school and just didn't have time to collect. And going out and girls were far more interesting than collecting cards. And I gave it up for a while as I went to uni. Came back to Seattle in 2000. The All-Star Game was in 2001 there. I volunteered to be in the All-Star Game there, and I was in the Fan Fest. So while there, they had a top set of competition. I happened to win the competition, so I got a Ichiro rookie and a box of Bowman cards there, which were really cool. Got me back into the hobby for a few years before I moved over here in 2003 and then completely forgot about it. And it wasn't until about 2 years ago, Graham had gone, you know, I'm thinking about starting up some baseball cards things, and I need someone that can kind of cover the era from the junk wax era. Are you interested in it? So yeah, okay, I'll do that there. And then Project 2020 came out, and it just completely blew me away and pulled me right back into it. And that's me.
That's amazing. Do you still have that Ichiro card?
It's back home. My brother, I've sent over 20 kilo boxes of baseball cards over. I still got a few more to go. That one hasn't quite made it over yet. My brother's glad to see it out of his house and coming over here. But yes, it's at home somewhere.
No, that's cool. How about yourself, Graham?
So yeah, so I guess for baseball cards specifically, I actually have Jason to blame for getting me into baseball cards. I guess like a lot of British kids, in the 80s and 90s, I grew up on stickers, on Panini stickers, football stickers. So that's where the general kind of collecting bug comes from. And then Jason and I and a few other of our friends, we did a bit of a tour of the US. And Jason will remind me of the year.
2005,
when he got married. So I don't remember, but he remembers it right straight away. So yeah, 2005, and we were in Jason's hometown of Seattle, and we went to Pike's Place Market, and there was a little store in there that sells single packs of cards, and he bought us all a single pack of cards. I think it was 1987 tops, I think, if my memory serves me correctly. And that was my first proper pack of baseball cards, and that's really what kind of scratched that collecting itch again. I thought, oh, this is quite interesting. But of course, back in the early 2000s, they're getting things sent across from the States. It wasn't quite as easy as it is now. You know, the internet was obviously a thing back then. I'm not that old, but but it was still very much in its infancy. So yeah, I guess, and then as time moved on, these things became a bit more accessible. We have a few mutual friends now in the States, and they're always happy to send things over for us as well if we need it. So just getting access to the products became easier, and that's really what got me back into it. Again, sort of 2017, 2018, I really seriously got back into collecting again.
So yeah, the landscape of baseball cards in America has changed like significantly over like the history. There was times when like it was amazing and like everybody was like really going for this, and then we had the era where then there was just like too many cards and nothing had any value. I think you call it like the junk wax era. And then it kind of disappeared maybe a little bit out of like the mainstream kind of mentality. But what we've seen in the last 12 months, well, to me personally, is it's quite ridiculous. Like, I think we've now seen, just from like the top end perspective, 6 or 7 cards go for more than $1 million. Like, including like a Mickey Mantle one, which I think went for over $5 million.
That's right. Yeah. And, it's just in January. Yeah.
Yeah. And so do you put the change that has happened in the last 12 months actually down to MLB not happening and people needing to find something to do with baseball cards? Or do you think that this was something that was building up before we had the pause to MLB because of the coronavirus?
It's almost a perfect storm of all of the above, plus the kids who were collecting in the '80s and the previous junk era, if that's what we're going to call it. So the guys around sort of Jason and I's age. So we're now at that age where we're perhaps getting a bit older. Maybe some of the kids are starting to fly the roost, head off to college, things like that. Not personally for Jason and I, but certainly of guys around our age. So sort of 40s, early 50s. So they might find there's a bit more disposable income is around, and they want to get back in touch with their youth. So maybe rather than going buying the convertible sports car, they start looking at their sports cars again. And then, of course, the world changed and COVID came along. And I think one of the things that has come out of this is that in times of crisis, people like to feel that kind of, I can't think of the word, but that kind of comfort of nostalgia. Thank you. Yeah. So they want that nostalgic feel, and the people turn back to things of their childhood. So they turn to, you know, familiar things, and baseball cards, I think, was one outlet for that.
Yeah. Completely agree. Like there's just so much that is nostalgia based, just even outside of baseball, outside of like cards. Like, I've seen so many things about people looking that they wanted to kind of find a complete set of maybe some point of a team, like in the 80s or the 70s when they were collecting as a kid. And it's about like, oh, I just want to kind of like have this memorabilia nostalgia moment from back then. And then there's like some serious collecting about kind of like trying to predict kind of like what's the future. So there's a really broad landscape of baseball cards. And I think kind of like one of the things like a lot of our fans may be unaware of is how kind of like broad that landscape is and how many kind of different names that go with it. We've mentioned a couple already. I like Topps is kind of like the one that jumps to my mind as kind of being like the most famous ones, but there are so many others out there. Jason, do you want to give like a brief overview of kind of like the world of baseball cards in like 2020?
Oh gosh. So it used to be just Topps had the license, and then 1981, Donruss and Fleer had the license, so all of a sudden you had another set competing with Topps. And then it wasn't until 88 when Score came out, there was another one. And then the big one was 89 Upper Deck, and they were the premium card there. And that's what it was, kind of the game changer. And that's why you see these Ken Griffey Jr. rookie cards when they're going for a big premium. Despite the fact, like, they literally printed millions of that Griffey card to hand out to the dealers. And so then you see this change going on from there. It went to the bubble burst probably about same time, 94, when the strike happened. And so you kind of see these things, companies kind of peter out. They overdid everything there. And then, but what happened in the 90s, you had inserts, and all of a sudden you had a Mickey Mantle autograph card. You had like a Cal Ripken card, a Ted Williams card that you can get an autograph on there. And so that's where you're starting to see how the landscape changed now. And then of course, when Graham pulled me back into this, you know, I would literally go to Costco and buy a box of cards for $10. and probably buy two and then try to make that whole set there. It's just not possible now. There's so many different variations, and Grandma knows better because that's his specialty. But yeah, you know, there's, you know, refractors of one of 250, one of 100, one of 50, one of 25, one of 10, one of 505, and the 101. And if you can get those 101s, you know, those are, that's where the big bucks are. So
yeah, it really did go from the sort of traditional. Again, I'll use the sticker analogy, where when we were growing up as kids, you had two different types of stickers. You had your shinies, which were most often like the club badge, and yep. Then the players were just like the normal player picture on the white background. And again, as Jason said, it's gone. Baseball cards used to very much be that way. Now, fair enough, much bigger sets, obviously, because you have more teams with more players on a team, so you have a pretty huge set to try and collect. But now, as you say, with the advent of all the extra cards now, so the insert sets where that could be celebrating. So, for example, this year Topps is celebrating 70 years of producing baseball cards. So they have a special insert set within the main set to celebrate that. So some people may wish to collect the insert set rather than the main players. And then, like say, you have the different parallel cards as well. So you might have a red colored version, as Jason said, there's only 50 of that particular card in that color produced. So you want to try and get one of those. Each one has its like super fractor, so like the super shiny version, and there's only one of those for each card. And you know, they even go so far as to including the plates that they use to print the cards. So they come like a little mini set of four, so you can get like the yellow printing plate and the black printing plate. And so yeah, they've taken this idea of the chase, which is what everyone refers to as. You know, they're chasing certain cards or chasing the autograph, and that's what they're really playing off now, is people chasing down either a particular card or a particular player. Or there are still people that build sets, but at the minute, where you see all the chat and all the action is people chasing down these big hit cards. So you know, rookie cards of exciting young players, or especially autograph cards, or the rookie autographs as well. And like say, you have the patch cards that may include a small swatch of game used memorabilia or something like that as well. And they're obviously a huge draw for collectors.
So yeah, so, and as I view it, kind of like collection of baseball cards has gone from, I think, like a pastime which people have done, and there have been like a few people going hardcore, to being, I'm now seeing box breaking. We're talking like YouTube videos of people doing this. It, for me, who's like quite an avid like gamer, it just looks like loot box mentality, where it's kind of, you're just getting like hundreds of these things and basically looking for that, like that one really like expensive item that you can then probably sell on and just kind of like continue this kind of going forward. Like, it's become like, is it wrong to say it's become more of a gambling hobby for, like, I think that is for some people, but where do you guys see like the majority of the people who are actually into baseball cards in like 2021 now? Is it still majority hobbyists, or has this kind of like gambling element and break boxing element become a majority?
That's a great question. There's two aspects to box breaks for sure. So if people don't know, the most common way to run a box break is you'll pre-sell the team slots within a certain box of cards. So for example, you might buy the Yankees in a break, so you would get all the Yankees cards from that box. So that serves kind of two purposes. Depending on if you collect players of a certain team, you want to obviously try and get your team, because that's going to help you build your set. And at the same time, with an entry level box of cards in 2021 costing for a hobby box, so that's I guess what we would call like a retail box, so 24 packs traditionally, with maybe 10 or 14 cards in a pack, depending what it is. So a good amount of cards. But that's really going to, like, they're starting this year from around £125, and then they go north from there. So, you know, it's not a cheap hobby. It's difficult to call it a hobby when to get your hands on a box that's starting at £125. I mean, I play a bit of golf, and people tell me that golf's an expensive hobby. You know, they need to take a look at baseball cards, I think. So it has that aspect of it means you can get access to the latest products for a much lower price threshold, which a lot of people find attractive. And then it has that other side to it as well. So if, for example, there are some of the more high-end products, so again, when you're speaking maybe £200-£300 for maybe half the amount of cards, because the cards are a bit more special, so they may be on slightly thicker card stock, you're going to get more guaranteed hit cards in it, so you could be guaranteed two or maybe three or more autograph cards. That's a bit more where you see the gambling element come into it. It's difficult to sell a box break on a product like that if you're selling, 15 spots in that box, where each person would be assigned two teams, and there's less than 15 cards in a product, for example, because that means that somebody's going to the math says that somebody's going to be empty-handed. So that's where it kind of runs the line between, is it actually gambling, or is it just a way to make product more accessible to people? So it's quite a fine line, to be fair.
Yeah, I kind of obviously I've seen that. And then what we're now seeing then is we have YouTube box breaking, and we have famous major league players like Phil Hughes and others who are kind of taking this to another dimension. I've not watched too much of it to really know the full details to me, but it almost seems like he can box break and do what they do, then the video gets enough revenue to continue on and go forth in this cycle. Do you think that this is something that is here to stay when it comes to baseball cards, or is this a short term flash in the pan? And if either of you knows a little bit more about what they do on those sorts of channels, feel free to explain, because I've only seen I've seen a couple of them just to see what it was.
Yeah. So Phil Hughes is a great example. I'm sitting here in a Yankees hat, which on a podcast you won't be able to see, but I'm wearing a Yankees hat. So Phil Hughes, obviously ex-major league pitcher, he has a channel on YouTube called Phil's Pools. And so his channel is a little bit, it runs the line between product review, and occasionally he does private breaks. So they're not publicly available. So he'll break some products for friends to make them more accessible. But when I'm talking about his kind of box breaks becoming more accessible, he's breaking boxes of cards that are $25,000 and having that as a box break. You can pull that face. that face is pretty obvious on sound as well. When we say there's some high-end stuff available, there's some real high-end products available. So he focuses a lot more on product review. It's not so much about the breaks when it comes to the YouTube channels, similar to Phil's Pools, and of course on Phil's Pools as well. Matt Stram, San Diego Padres pitcher, he also has a channel as well, which I've recently started watching, and his is very much the same. So these guys are both, as well as being current or ex-major league pitchers, they're both huge collectors as well. So I think, I'm pretty sure Phil Hughes is on record as saying that he started up his channel because he had received so many requests from people saying, oh, you put all your pictures on Instagram of all your cards and your collection. It'd be cool to watch you open boxes. And people, it's a bit like the unboxing fad that is sort of around on YouTube in general. I have a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old, two daughters, 9-year-old and 5-year-old, and they will sit and watch unboxing videos of kids unwrapping toys all day long. And I think this is just the adult version of that. It's the same thing. If Phil Hughes is sitting opening a case of baseball cards, so 12 boxes of cards that probably cost him $6,000 or $7,000, that's aspirational stuff. And I think people are watching it from that aspirational point of view as well, and thinking, wow, if I had the money, I would be doing this as well. So obviously as a 14-year major league professional, he's most likely got the disposable income to do this. But of course, like you say, the more viewership he gets and the more interaction he gets across his social media channels, you can see now that the sponsorships are starting to come in. So, he's obviously getting sponsorships from people as well. So it's not all about his outlay versus his income, but it's turned into a far more commercial thing. And you are starting to see more of these channels pop up. You mentioned there about being a gamer, so you'll be familiar with Twitch, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So if you look hard enough, you can find it on Twitch as well. People will live stream it on Twitch, myself included. When I do, when we do our box breaks through Shoutout Sports Cards, I live stream it on Twitch. to try and hook into that audience as well.
Yeah, I've seen Trevor May do a few of his on his channel. He generally just kind of like box breaks anything, because I've seen him do it with Pokemon cards and just be like utterly frustrated by like the Pokemon cards that he's getting that way as well. Or it's kind of like it's highly amusing. And I think, yeah, like when there has that kind of like aspirational element to it, I like personally, like I got like no issues with those sorts of things. I think it's kind of like, it's great for, you're right, like kids will watch people unload a box. I will watch somebody kind of like maybe draw a very expensive card and be kind of like, oh my God, that's like amazing. Like there are videos of people doing it in the stores, like from the past and kind of like when they happen, like you see people's reactions like in the room and how everybody has it. Like these were big deals kind of like over the past as well, but it's now just, we have like a faster medium of kind of like showing this to everybody.
Yeah.
So there's tons of places that you, well, not tons of places, tons of different types of cards that you could get. If somebody was interested in getting into cards now, what would you say to them is kind of like a good way to kind of like dip the toe in? To kind of like, should they be going like, hey, think, do you want to go like, what's your favorite team? Do you have a favorite player? Go on eBay, kind of like pick up one or two cards. Or are you thinking like, maybe I want to kind of like see, get some new cards, like the fresh type. Like, what's the way in for a beginner or somebody who's just fresh to the market nowadays?
That's, yeah, that's a very important question. And it's something that we see. So there's two or three quite large Facebook communities, you know, Facebook being the ubiquitous beast that it is. It is a great place to start. There are also card communities on the other main social media networks as well. So Instagram, and there's plenty of collectors on Twitter as well. I'll speak personally for Facebook because that's where I spend most of my time. Jason's far more au fait at the wider reach of social media. I'm still a bit crap at social media. So there's a few UK card collecting communities on Facebook, and you know, just join. I would say join. And ask questions, just kind of get advice. It's one of these things you do need to kind of think about, because you can very quickly get sucked in, and before you know, you're off down the rabbit warren and you're not really quite sure and you're a bit overwhelmed, because as we've already discussed, there's any number of different products come out every year with all the different variations and everything inside, and they're all just variations on a theme. So the main things are, the main thing to really keep in mind is budget. Because, you know, as I've said, the box is starting at kind of £125 and going up from there, unless you're super lucky and you get them within 12 minutes on Topps UK for £75, as we saw. So for this year, for the first time, Topps UK had stock of the 2021 Series 1 baseball cards available for sale direct to the public. And they sold out their stock, we think, in about 8 minutes. It was sold out. So when I say £125, they're about £125 now from UK resellers. If you could have gotten direct from Topps, they were 75. The amount of finance you want to put into it is something you need to try and keep control of. Start small, I would say. Pick a team. If it's your team, then maybe pick a team and then pick a set and try and get your, you know, pick a style or a design that you like and maybe fits within your budget. Like I say, have a look on eBay. There's a lot of card collectors in the UK who will list their cards on eBay. So that there's a lot of cards available there. A fair few go back to the US, but a lot are also bought by UK collectors. So have a look on eBay. It gives you an idea on the kind of on what's available. And the cost, and then, you know, take that first step and make that first purchase. And then, you know, once you get your hands on them and you kind of, you get a feeling for it, then you're off to the races.
I was going to say, you want to bring it further down that, you might as well go by player, you know,
take your player, yeah.
Just collect that card and variation. There's a collector in the group who's a big Tony Gwynn fan, and he just got his 600 different Tony Gwynn card. Yeah, you know, and he's been doing it for a while there. So, you know, you can go down all sorts of variants there. But yeah, it's a tough one to choose.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. I said, like, for me, last year, I was kind of, I looked at all, I was like, I wasn't kind of like decided on which ones I wanted. I was just like, let's have a look to kind of like see what's out there. I picked up a couple of boxes of the Inception 2020 set because I was like, this to me is like a really cool design. It's a slightly premium one, so you get like one signed one or whatever. And it was the kind of like, yeah, liked them, cool. And then like a few weeks later, it was like, oh, I might get another one. Oh, like the price is now twice as much as it used to be because all of these things just kind of like because you have such short limits on like these new products that kind of like do that. So as I say, yeah, like if people, I think eBay is amazing. I was like seeing that you could get like a pack, like £4, you can get like a load of like random cards from like a team from like the 80s or the 90s or whatever, and just be like, go get some cards, like enjoy, have a look, kind of like see which ones like take your fancy, everything that's coming up. Like there's from what I see it, there's a lot of like nostalgia and style also creeping back into kind of like the stuff that we see nowadays, as well as kind of like new things that are coming through. Do you want to talk through like the top 70 stuff that's been happening kind of like recently, and all of like these like specialized cards that have been coming out?
Yeah, I'll talk happily about Project 2020 and Project 70. So, because this is what kind of pulled me in, is back in the collecting, was these Project 2020 was 20 artists doing 20 players rookie cards. And then each artist did each one. So it was a 400 card set. And they picked from a wide variety of artistic backgrounds, from Keith Short, McKellar Beer art director, to F. Dot, who was a muralist, to Blake Jameson, who was just an artist, to Old Man Allen, who was a kind of an influencer in the background that no one knows about. So you have these kind of just different artists doing the different cards, and their interpretation at first was like, okay, you've interpreted the card in your kind of style there, and we had a giggle on a couple cards, said, oh, that's it. And then all of a sudden it just shot up, and people went crazy for them, you know, just because we're all locked down in the pandemic. And but it was interesting because, you know, I guess when you start collecting, you started building sets, and with the extra cards, you always had the players you pulled. But, you know, I always looked at the front of the card. I actually never looked at the whole of the card. And so it wasn't until probably a few years ago, and I ran across this guy named Jimmy Parker, who runs Beauty of a Game, and he was involved in a show that happens in North Carolina every year called Baseball Card is Art. And it's just looking at baseball cards as actually art, because obviously somebody sat down, designed the card, and do that. And if you look at all the sets, it's usually a variation from the sets in the 50s and 60s, and they've just kind of grown from there. And so when I started looking at the aesthetics of it, I found it really more interesting. So when Project 2020 came out, I was blown away by what these artists would do. You know, you kind of had run-of-the-mill cards till about 80 to 100, and then the artists really started putting their own spin on the cards in there. And yeah, it just absolutely blew me away, and I couldn't get enough of it. My bank account suffers because of it. And then this time they've come out with Project 70. This time it's 51 artists doing 20 cards of their choice. And yeah, it's a 1,020 card set. But you have big names in there, like Snoop's doing a card, which I thought was really pretty cool for Snoop to be in a card. Bobby Hundreds is doing a card. I'm trying to think of some of the other big names there. Who's the guy that did the Joe? We just talked about this yesterday. The Joe Kelly mural. Jonas Never, he's doing a card there. And then they brought back most of the Project 2020 cards. So it's been interesting. And, you know, it's always fun to see an artist kind of interpret whatever player they want in kind of that style of card there. So they're picking any of the cards they've done in the last 70 years. So they kind of take that border that's and then interpret it that way. And I'm excited about this. It's a lot of fun. There's some really interesting cards out there.
Cool. So slightly step question here. Like, what is the favorite card that you have like in your collections? Obviously, Jason, people can't see, but he has like a massive mural of cards behind him from the junk wax. But do you have your one card that is kind of like?
I would probably say, just because I never had it growing up, and I don't know how many packs of 89 Fleer I opened up, but I have the Billy Ripken F-Face card, and I'll let you guys Google that one up yourself there. And that was definitely one of those cards I actually had to have. So that's probably my favorite card I own, just for the value of that. But then I also, I do have a 1951 Ted Williams Bowman card that I, that probably my favorite card that I keep in my drawer and I peek at, and I kind of go, ah, oh, it's kind of cool. I have a card that's 60 years old, 70 years old.
Yeah, I guess my favorite one. So 50 Cent is responsible for one of the most infamous first pitches in baseball history. And I've Jason, actually, again, I had mentioned in passing that it was one of the cards I didn't have. I think it was from, I can't remember what year it was from. I'm not going to embarrass myself, but Topps included it in their flagship set for the following year to commemorate his first pitch. And Jason happened to have a spare and sent it to me. So for comedic purposes, that's my favorite. I have a vintage Bobby Thompson card. It's not his rookie card. So Bobby Thompson, the Staten Island Scot, who was born in Glasgow, obviously. So I have one of his cards. Possibly my favorite outside of that. It's a baseball card, but not actually of a baseball player. So the eponymous chef and travel writer Anthony Bourdain, he had a card in Topps Allen and Ginter series, and I have an autographed Anthony Bourdain Allen and Ginter baseball card that's that has pride of place in my collection.
I was half hoping / joking that you're about to say you had a signed Joey Mellors card there from the Allen and Ginter set from last year.
From last year, yeah.
As he managed to make his way on that. I never saw a signed one apart from like in the images that he posted when he was doing them, but I've seen a few of those in the wild.
Yeah, we didn't pull any. We did a few breaks of Allen Ginter last year, and I think I pulled one out of a pack. I know a few people in the community have also pulled his card, and I think at least one person in the UK pulled his autograph card. But if you do have a base, I believe if you send him your card, he will sign it for you and send it back.
I have two. I bought them off a guy because he didn't want them. And Joey said, you know, when he comes back this summer, he said he was going to sign them for me. So, but he said the post in Korea is pretty dodgy at the moment, so he didn't want to get lost. So, I'll have him sign it. And then when he does sign it, I'll give him away to somebody because I think it's pretty cool to have someone in the community that has their own card.
That was a really cool thing, actually. Like, just to acknowledge the fandom over here in that way. You know, I understand he's maybe a bit of a Marmite personality, but you know, it's still a very cool thing that Topps did that.
Yeah, to me, I think it's in sharp contrast to the Topps kind of like UK cards that kind of came out last year. Like the things that they determined that were like UK and British. For like those, I think it was 20-25 cards that were specifically kind of like British that you could get. Or maybe was it 40? I think that caused much consternation, at least within the Batflips and Nerds, that there was a certain lady who had one of those cards. Milk Stealer, shall we say, nameless. But
listen, you've got a Scotsman on this podcast, and you're going to bring up Margaret Thatcher. Come on now.
So do you have the Margaret Thatcher card?
No, I don't, funnily enough. But yeah, interesting choice. I can understand why they did it, right? It's the kind of the great British twee off for the American market. I understand that. But even to that extent, Margaret Thatcher is an odd choice. You could think of a lot more. I mean, I'd rather have a Joanna Lumley card than a Margaret Thatcher card any day of the week. But
I was shooting for the Loch Ness Monster, you know.
Well, we are talking about beasts, so
yeah. Now I'm just expecting the Loch Ness Monster to race Margaret Thatcher at the next MLB event in the UK if we ever get one. But
I think Allen and Ginter does have a Loch Ness Monster set because they did the monster and set. I think I was looking there because I was looking for a dinosaur card for another card art project I was working on, but yes, there was a Loch Ness Monster card.
Yeah, they've certainly done mythical beasts before, that's for sure. Yeah.
So yeah, that's one question I wanted to get onto, which is about, to me, like, obviously, like, I have the idea about baseball cards, have the idea about the good old day of football stickers. I myself, I think I have a Merlin 93-94 set, which is full, but like the book is absolutely like in tatters because it was, I think I was 7 probably when I started it. And so like things are like, there are things that are very badly stuck down, which the adult goes back to me and go like, oh, why didn't I just ask my parents to stick it in? Because it looks awful. But like, how is like the card world in other sports? Like what's big? I'm seeing kind of big sales going on for the top end cards in basketball as well. Like, what other sports are kind of big, and maybe what other sports are big, maybe just like in the UK, as you guys see?
Well, yeah, so you make a good point about recent sales. So recent singles sales, so just last week, or it might even be this week, it's that fresh news. So
Sunday.
I'm going to butcher his surname, but Luka Doncic, is that right? Jason,
Doncic,
yeah. So a Luka Doncic card, a rookie card. So it's only like 3-year-old card, went for $4.5 million. So basketball's kind of on fire. With the rookies from the last 2 or 3 years. So Luka being one, obviously Zion was the big headline from last year. So really boxes of basketball products really ignited the fire for prices really skyrocketing. There was a point last year where you couldn't get any kind of basketball product for, a hobby product for less than $1,000. It was just ridiculous, to be perfectly honest. We're seeing the same thing happening with American football cards as well. Prices on those are gradually escalating, again bolstered by a strong rookie class once again. Rookies being the one thing that people across all the sports are determined to chase. If you can find that rookie card and sit on it for, well, as Luca has shown, you only need to sit on it for 2 or 3 years, and if these guys show the potential, then you're going to be looking at a big return on your investment if you can find these things. So yeah, it's seen it across them all. As much as people in the baseball card community will comment on price and how it has gone up compared to where it was 2 or 3 years ago, compared to where we are right now with basketball and American football, we've got off. The baseball collectors are getting off still quite light. That's not to say it's remarkably good value, shall we say. And I say that as a retailer of the product, which is kind of insane. But when you compare it like for like with what we're seeing in NFL and basketball, it's still at the more affordable end of the spectrum. What's been really interesting is to see the way that soccer cards have exploded, and that really happened last year in 2020. With people, I think, looking for a collectible marketplace that was more accessible and not as expensive as basketball and NFL were. And that's for European, that's American collectors collecting European soccer cards. So the Euro 2020 set, which of course hasn't happened yet. And now they need to include Scotland cards. Dang it. There will be Scotland cards in these collections. So we've even seen the price of soccer traditionally ignored by the US market, and now those prices have gone up to the point that one of the flagship products, 2021 products, I think came out today, or perhaps it's tomorrow, and that was pre-selling for around $750 a box, where I would say 3 years ago it would have been maybe $100 a box. So that gives you an idea on just how much it's ramped up across the board.
Has baseball managed to avoid that price hike because it has a wider variety of kind of like these top end cards, or is it just because it has like a longer like back catalog that people can like spend their money across? So like these newer things are not there, or is everybody just trying to get the Jason Dominguez or Wander Franco card so they can have that kind of ready to sell for millions in a few years time?
Jason, you go.
Well, I would say, I mean, I've been through this once before. So, and again, in the 88, 90s, you had these huge rookies taking off, Griffey being one of them. And we have this kind of ongoing joke with Kevin Mass. I keep sending Graham all my cards from Kevin Mass because he slugged like 21 homers in 40 games to the Yankees. And he was the next big thing. And his cards were going for like $20, and now they're just worth nothing. So, you had this kind of happen before, and you're seeing it happen again. You know, you're hoping that you get the card and get it encapsulated, get it sent off and graded, and then you're trying to flip it. And that's really what you're trying to do, because you're just trying to get this most money as you can get. Because if you look at 10 years back, you're gonna go, I had this card at one point, it was the same thing with Sosa Maguire. I had so many Sosa Maguire rookies, and I was like, I'm gonna retire on this. This isn't gonna pay for my uni. And yeah, they're worth about a fiver right now.
There's no retirement going on there, that's for sure.
No, that's why I'm stuck selling jerseys.
Yeah. So yeah, that definitely has a part to play in it. The rookie chase is it really does fuel that. I think baseball is slightly different from the other three major American sports is that for a lot of these rookies, a lot of these like super young kids that people get really high on, their path from being drafted to actually making the major leagues is significantly longer than it is in the other sports.
Yep.
If you're a real prospect chaser, there's one release that you look out for every year, or two maybe. So the Bowman range, which also comes from Topps, it's just one of Topps brands, focuses very much on the prospects. So the major league rookies will get in the flagship series, they'll get their rookie card, and it's officially recognized as a rookie card because it has a little RC stamp on it, and that becomes their official rookie. But before that, you can get your first Bowman card. So that's the first time you appear as a professional in a licensed product. And these are the ones that, you know, you're buying now, and, you know, you're almost guaranteeing yourself. You have to wait at least 6 years to see if these guys are even going to make the major leagues. Because even if they're in the very top tier prospects with baseball and time served and all that, you know, all that good stuff, all their strange labor laws, it's going to be 3, 4, 5 plus years before you have an idea if these guys are going to make the big leagues. I think it's safe to say that out of the four major sports in the US, baseball is still the biggest, you know, as far as the card collecting market goes. So Topps has that going for them. They have like by far the widest customer base. So the sheer volume, I think, helps keep prices down. They also have the exclusive rights to the MLB Players Association, so they can use logos and they can use team names. So they'll have the only fully official set. Now, I don't know how much they paid for those rights a few years ago, but I would hazard it significantly less than Panini's having to fork over to get the rights to NFL cards and the NFL teams and the NFL players. So because nobody else can really touch what they do, they have that closed market, but it is the biggest market and they're paying less to get the rights. So they can deliver the product cheaper. And I think as much as Topps get a hard time, and quite rightly so for a lot of what they do get a hard time and they deserve it. But they've done a reasonable job at keeping prices at a level where the seasoned collector can still get into it. Can kids still get into it these days for pocket money? You need to be really lucky. It's really difficult to find retail product on the shelves of stores like Walmart and Target or, you know, places like that. Or even if you're lucky enough to have a local card shop, which, you know, obviously that industry went through a massive contraction in the slump of the kind of late 90s, early 2000s, where trading card shops were just shutting up shop left, right, and center. So if you're lucky enough to still have a local card store, the odds on them having if they have a hobby box that they've opened and you can buy a single pack from, when they're having to retail that box at $125+, well, you know, I'm no Rachel Riley, but to do 125 divided by 24, you're still looking at sort of $6-7 a pack by the time, you know, your hobby store owner puts a markup on it. So to pay $7 potentially for a pack of 10 cards, and like Jason said, in the 90s, you could have walked into Costco and bought an entire box for that money. It makes it very difficult. And they really are on this line of how do we satisfy the existing collectors, but also keep bringing the kids in? Because as we discussed already, it's very much being fueled by the nostalgia trip at the minute. And let's say people who grew up in the 80s and 90s who now have that disposable income to get back into collecting.
Do you think that if they introduced something where there was just tons of volume, so like none of the cards would then actually be specifically worth that much, but would be cheaper and kids could get into them, is that something that you could see them doing, or is it just kind of like not worth the time and the effort because just the markup isn't there for kind of like what they could do compared to continuing to run out these like high-end products?
So to be fair to Topps, they do at least two series a year, which is aimed at the younger collector. That doesn't necessarily make it price accessible. It's certainly far more accessible. So Topps opening day, which funnily enough comes out around opening day, and also Topps big league, which very much is aimed at the younger collector, but they had a really cool 90s theme last year, And so it was just popular across the board. So they keep costs down on that by, they print it on a much thinner cardstock. So it's getting, it's more towards thick paper than actual cardboard. Whereas your normal like flagship top series release would be on like a nice cardboard, not like a super thick, like, you know, you said you've handled Inception cards. So you kind of know where I'm coming from with this. Inception's on a much thicker, much more premium cardstock. It's very nicely printed and a nice printing process, and all the autographs are done in like shiny silver pen, and all the autographs are done on a card. So for the cheaper releases, they'll print it on a much lighter cardstock. Your odds on getting an autograph card will be much longer. But of course, with the cheaper price, you can maybe afford to open more packs. And if you are lucky enough to hit an autograph, your odds of it being done on a sticker and then the sticker applied onto the card is much higher. So that's another way that they keep the cost down, because they can have a player sit and sign 1,000 stickers and then just stick stickers on 10 different products. And that's another way that they try and keep it accessible. So again, as talks may come in for a lot of stick, they do at least try and cater to the younger audience, definitely. And I guess opening day is perhaps being pitched more as an entry set, not necessarily a kid set. Big League is very much pitched at the younger collector, but Topps opening day, they're sort of apexing that into a more accessible set for the novice collector, not just the young collector.
And just going back to your story, talking about going into like card shops to get cards, I was remembering back in 2012, quite a lot of people in the office that I worked in were trying to do the Euro 2012, I think, sticker book. And pretty much at lunchtime, they would go walk into the town centre, go to the WH Smiths, and just buy all of the stickers, and then come back into the office and spend like the 30 minutes of lunchtime just kind of going like, yeah, like pulling them all out, then just swapping things around with each other to kind of get what they want. And I'm like, well, no kid's gonna get that sticker today. and they'll go into WH Smith the next day and they'll be like, no, we don't have any stock, and every day until they have the stock, and then they'll buy it out. And so it's kind of like it's how young kids get into it. Like I actually have a two opening day ones actually on hand right now, which was given to me as part of like the Backflips and Nerds Secret Santa. So I have a 2018 Danny Salazar and a 2018 Slider, the mascot for Cleveland. As I say, like, I think these are, hopefully if they're priced in that range, it's the things that people can get into. Like if anybody went to any of the MLB community meetings probably in the last 2 years, there have been tens if not hundreds of these on the tables that if you wanted to kind of like collect and have a look and see what they're like, they're there to go around and you can kind of really see what's going on. I was gonna say that from the Inception collection, the few cards that I got, the one that I actually really amuses me nowadays is I have a Randy Rosarena rookie card, but he's in his Cardinals uniform. Oh. So like, feel like that's one to pull out as like a bittersweet memory for any Cardinals fan as it kind of goes forward. One of the things you mentioned, quickly going back though, was about getting cards like authenticated. Like there is a big rigmarole about like how to get this done properly. And I think more recently, there's quite a big thing going on about people just wanting to get like all of their cards authorized by like the top end people, even though it's kind of not really worth the time and effort to kind of go into that. So, like, what goes into like authenticating a card?
Well,
that's your expertise area.
Oh well,
I guess it's the era of the junk era slabbed cards there, and then of course the modern ones there. But I don't have any slab cards yet, but I'm going to send one eventually when those year-long wait lists slow down a little bit.
Yeah, it's been a fairly hot topic of conversation for us, certainly the last few weeks. So there's a big discussion. So the grading can greatly affect the value of a card. And I guess as we touched on right now, one of the hot ways that people are seeing this as an investment is to pull one of the nice rookie cards. So you mentioned Randy Arozarena. He's a great example from last year. Kyle Lewis as well, of course, reigning rookie of the year. So the idea being is that as soon as you pull that car from the pack, you pop it in your little protective sleeve, you pop it in a little hard plastic cover, keep it nice and safe, and then you send it off to one of the grading companies. So the two main grading companies that operate out of the US are PSA and Beckett, and they're by far the most respected in the baseball sphere, certainly, for modern cars. The idea being, you get it to them, they assess the card for its quality to see, they inspect the surface, they inspect the edges, the corners. If it's autographed, they'll look at the quality of the autograph, and then they'll give it a grade. They'll give it a grade out of 10. And then depending how high that grade is, that can have a huge impact on the resale value of that card. So lots of people coming along, and there'd be lots of hot rookie cards to get their hands on. Everyone was ripping packs and then immediately sending their cards, all these rookie cards, off to the likes of Beckett and PSA to get graded, to try and get the most back for their card, which is, if you're looking to flip a card, I guess that's exactly what you want to do. The problem then became that Beckett and PSA became completely overwhelmed. And I believe I saw a Facebook post the other day, so you could take it with as many grains of salt as you wish, but I believe PSA had acknowledged that they had an 8 million card backlog at the minute that they're waiting to get graded. So their response to this has been, just yesterday, they've announced that they're doubling their prices essentially for all their grading services to try and slow down the influx of people sending every $5 card basically that they pull to send in to get graded, to get it back, to hope to get $55 for it rather than $5 because it comes back as a 10. So the best condition it could possibly be. So by putting their prices up, they're trying to either lessen or completely take away the return on investment for some of these people and hopefully slow down the influx of cards that they're getting. That is a bold tactic to try and slow down people sending you things. We'll just flat out double our price and people won't want to pay it, so they won't send us any cards. It's an interesting tactic. It's going to be fun to see how that works out. They have, I guess, quite rightly caught a reasonable amount of flack in some of the US based baseball card collecting groups, again on good old Facebook, for this move. But if they feel that that's what they need to do to get their business back on track, then who are we to argue? Because people are complaining. You know, if you paid the $20 back at the start of 2020 for what they said would be a 4-week turnaround, and it's turned into an 11-month turnaround, then, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it. You can't expect to get everything done for $20 in 4 weeks when they've got an 8 million card backlog they need to try and get through. So it's definitely really interesting. For so long, so long, maybe until as recently as 3 or 4 months ago, if you were trying to sell a graded card and it wasn't done by Beckett or PSA, you could basically forget it. You might as well just take it out of the case and sell it as an ungraded card. With all the troubles now, we're seeing new grading card companies popping up, and people are, rather than just dismissing them, which would have happened like 2 or 3 years ago, saying, oh, there's no way, it's Beckett, PSA or nothing. Now these new grading card companies are coming along and they're actually finding that they're starting to get traction in the marketplace. So as much as PSA have made this move to try and slow down or influence the marketplace in that way, we do now see these companies, either new companies starting up who are starting to do grading, or companies who grade in other areas of collectibles who are now moving into sports cards. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, I think, over the next kind of over the rest of this year, I would say. It'll be fun to see where we are in 12 months with what the community considers a righteously graded card or not. Again, this all harks back to this fabulous junk era again. When I guess everybody and their granddad was authenticating or trying to authenticate cars and authenticate autographs, and then a whole load of them were found out to be fakes, and the FBI got involved and heaps of people went to jail, and that's what really put the brakes on everyone and said, right, we're only going to go with these two big ones, either Beckett or PSA, because we know that they can be trusted. And then, of course, PSA have got a class action lawsuit against them just now. But that's a whole other story.
That's another subject.
That's a whole other subject, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think anything that's probably anti-monopolistic is probably a good thing for the market. It will be obviously interesting to see if people accept the degrading values from some of these other things. I've seen tweets, I think more around NFL than some other ones, where like somebody had, I think it was a Pat Mahomes card that was graded as Tom Brady.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, come on, man. Like,
yeah. That's funny. That's funny. That went around like wildfire. That went through every group and every sport. That picture was shown pretty much. So, yeah, and funny enough, that was one of the new startup companies who had promised to bring a whole new attitude to the way that cards are graded, and they're using like advanced algorithms and AI and machine learning and all these modern buzzwords that I know too much about because I work in that industry. And one of the first things they put out is a Pat Mahomes card that says Tom Brady on it. Like, wait to get started, guys. I mean, where's your quality control? You still need that human touch, even if it's at the end, just to go, oh, that's not Tom Brady. But yeah, there you go. Mistakes happen, I guess.
Yeah, you think when you're starting out, you've got to be like, right, boys and girls, like, we can't make, like, a mistake here. Well, you could also say, like, it's given them so much publicity, like, let's see kind of, like, if they run at, like, a slightly below price, people might not care. But
that's what they're pushing. They're saying, well, we're not going to put our prices up, and we'll get your cards back to you really quick. But when you're new and nobody uses you, you can say those things, right? But then if everyone looked at it and went, all right, let's do that, and all of a sudden they got sent a million cards overnight, then they're in the same hole that Beckett and PSA have found them in. So, but you know, good luck to them. Hopefully they can recover from it. I'm sure they will, because mistakes happen. Like I say, mistakes happen all the time. Now, when you're starting up a business, you're exactly right. You know, you want to put a little bit more effort into your quality control so things like that don't happen. And as you said, you know, in research for the interview tonight, as you profess to not being a huge baseball card guy, you managed to find that thing. So, so it just shows you how huge it went, right? So,
yeah. Also, anything that I work in, like, I've worked in, like, financial tech. I actually work for Facebook now, so all the time that we've said Facebook this evening, not an advert.
Facebook sucks. Have I mentioned that?
No, that's fine. Like, we can do that. Like, just got to be shown that obviously I'm not giving any preferential treatment whatsoever. But yeah, any of these things that kind of like show that, like, yeah, we're using like advanced kind of like AI or blockchain technology or whatever, like, it instantaneously sets off like my kind of like warning radars to be kind of like,
yeah,
let's see what you're doing. Like, I know due to like some fantastic stuff that like AI was used and like machine learning was used to identify like Pollock paintings, like real ones from fake ones, and like you can do some of this stuff. It's really interesting. But if I'm grading like a $50 card, like what really needs to go into it to kind of to get that to kind of get that element? It's been really fascinating to talk to both of you guys. I think the one thing I want to finish up with is Tea and Tops, the podcast that you guys have been doing over the last few weeks. And you guys are running a really interesting art competition. So do you guys want to quickly go a little bit over the podcast and then we can talk about the art competition?
Sure, yeah. It was just something we kind of just came organically. I've got kind of the art gown and kind of card art. I did interviews for the Negro League Baseball Museum fundraiser I was in. I got chatted to an artist and I felt really bad because they had all this cool artwork and they're like, hey, yeah, we'll send you a painting. Hey, yeah, we'll send you some cards. And I'm like, I got nothing. Like, I got a microphone and I've got a webcam. That's all I got. So I started kind of just doing my own card art there. And it was just a good way to trade with people there. And we started to see a couple of people in the community start doing their own card art. There's obviously a few people in the UK that are artistic enough there. And it's just kind of like, hey, you know, why don't we try to kind of engage with our community more and just kind of get a competition going? Matt from Angels Across the Pond was like, look, I found this thing. The kids can get certification from the university that said they engaged in this. It's like, that's perfect. We want to be accessible enough that we can get cards to kids. And, I've got tens of thousands of cards. Matt has tens of thousands of cards. There's other people that go, you have your base cards that you just don't know what to do with. So if you can go donate 40 cards to people and have some fun cutting up, or you get your kids involved to do it with, it's just something kind of fun. So I think we talked about this Thursday. It's Tuesday now. And we're kind of like, all right, let's go do this and kind of, just kind of a fun way to kind of just engage with the UK and hopefully the European audience. We've had some people from the US going, I'm in. We've got a couple people for judges. I won't say who it is yet, but they're pretty heavy hitters in the card industry. And yeah, I've got some artists lined up for that. So yeah, we're gonna kind of kick it off well from today, and then we'll run up to the end of spring training and probably pick a winner on opening day, just to kind of have a little fun.
Yes, I see Buffett and Nerd's premier artist, Mr. Pringle, will be at least entering one submission. He was, I honestly have to say, Tom has like gone from like an absolute novice to producing some like really great pieces of like art during this lockdown, and it just shows like what I could have done if I'd actually used my time efficiently instead of, I don't know, just researching more baseball statistics that about 15 people care about and no one else does. But hey, each to our own.
Yeah, Tom's actually already submitted two pieces of work, and then I think he's having his daughters do some stuff in there. So he was one of the first people to jump right in there. And then Laura Bain of LJ's Clubhouse, she's done a piece of art already for us there. So yeah, and you know, there's a bunch of people in the community. You know, we just didn't realize they're out there. So just hoping that we kind of engage more with people to kind of go, look, you know, send Matt two pounds. He'll send you 40 cards. You can cut them up, see what you come up with. And just something to do during spring training. You can do it while you're watching the games. You know, we're all up late watching games. So you might as well just cut some cards up.
Yeah, I'm a person who's been out to watch spring training, and kind of actually watching spring training online to me almost does nothing, because I'm like, the first 2 weeks, you're like, these are either kids who have basically never faced a half decent fastball, or they're a pitcher who's basically spent the entire offseason working on a new pitch. And it's now like, I'm going to throw this, and I'm just going to throw this pitch until I work it out. But yeah, it's each to their own. It's obviously great to see baseball. It's I'm thoroughly missing not going out to Arizona this year like I've done for the last two seasons. Obviously, my last year trip did not go particularly well because it lasted like 4 days. But because I timed it perfectly for everything.
Perfectly, yeah. Yeah, that's good to say. That's fantastic timing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of feel the same way. It's like, it's great baseball's back, but yeah, I'm kind of waiting until another 2 or 3 weeks before I really start turning in and watching the games there. But yeah, I'm definitely excited baseball's back.
Oh yeah, it's it feels different. I kind of, as much as I enjoyed a year of watching CPBL, watching KBO, watching some of like the NPB, and like even then watching kind of some of like the Dominican stuff like this winter, it kind of to feel like a proper MLB season is maybe upon us. It's exciting. It was
the same but different, wasn't it? It was interesting to watch some of the other baseball from around the world. Somebody drew up a really great analogy that's escaped me now, but yeah, it was like a variation on a theme. It wasn't quite the same, but it was certainly fun, like watching some of the Korean baseball. And that kind of it was funny how that entered the general zeitgeist for quite a while, because it was getting a lot of coverage in the States, and you know, seeing merch popping up and things like that for, you know, the team that's basically owned by LG and the team that's basically owned by Kia. And it was really cool to see these teams getting mentioned. But yeah, like I say, the prospect of a full MLB season, I think, is a good thing.
Cool. I'll ask one final question. Do you boys have any foreign baseball cards?
Ooh. Wow.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think I do. I think the closest we have, so we have a shared ownership, I guess, in a Shohei Ohtani pre-rookie card from the World Baseball Classic in 2017, I think. And I think that's probably the closest, because he wasn't a major leaguer then. He was still in Japanese baseball. But it was an official Bowman card, but from the World Baseball Classic. But no, I don't actually have any cards from outside of the major leagues.
No, I don't think we do. I think we were trying to find some Taiwanese cards last year at one point.
Yeah. I was trying to find just get anything out of Taiwan, like get a cap, like a shirt or whatever. It was like, yeah, that was very hard. But
yeah, I've trolled the Japanese marketplaces a few times looking for things, but yeah, it's tough going.
Well, cheers, gents. Where can the listeners find you on the social medias?
You can find us on that. Thanks for having us on, first of all. You can follow us on T and Tops. We're on across all the platforms there, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And yeah, we'd trying to engage everyone on Twitter at the moment, but yes, with I guess we broadcast a show on Facebook and Twitch. You know the Twitch channel, I'll let you do that one.
Yeah, so we try and keep it fairly regular. So Monday nights, 9 p.m. Like I say, we stream it live on Facebook at the Tea and Tops Facebook page. And also, at the minute, it's live on Twitch on my channel, which is twitch.com/shutouttv.
Cool. Thank you both for talking about baseball cards. It's been really interesting, and I hope that our listeners get into the hobby as well. I found it like a very cathartic thing during kind of like this off season, and it might be one that, given a certain spend here or there, I will look to continue in the future.
Absolutely, yeah. I say if people do have questions or want any advice on getting into the hobby, then absolutely, yeah, you can reach out to us on at Tea and Tops. And we'll be happy to answer the questions.
Cheers, gents. Have a nice rest of your day.
Thanks a lot.